The recording has started.
I have the same experience.
Hi, everyone. It's Jordan here. Look, the reason it's dead silence is that I was waiting to get a reliable dial-out line before I started the call, but that isn't happening, so we'll just kick off. If my audio breaks up, it's because I'm using the Adobe Room, but here's hoping. Could we start the recording, please, if it hasn't already been? There we go. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon. Good evening. My name is Jordan Carter. I'm your rapporteur here for Working Party One. I expect you can all hear me. The items on our agenda today are relatively snappy. I'm sorry for the shifting agenda here. But the three things that we've got on our deck are to look at the to basically give council the chance to take any questions from us on two pieces of work. The first is the long PDF document that was created over the weekend, which had our templates all replicated and bits of legal advice added at the end, along with a covering memo. The second thing that we'll work through in relation to legal is the shorter memo that the council provided in response to our draft comment content. Now, originally we had planned in this meeting to go through the what the lawyers were proposing for the mechanisms to deliver all these powers, but we're going to do that in the working in the CCWG call on Tuesday. So we're not going to have that discussion today. What this is a chance for you to ask any questions of council on that material. We're not going to go through it exhaustively. We will only allocate about 20 minutes of this call to that because it's the first bite of the cherry. Then we'll have the CCWG meeting where there will be much more of this on the table, full presentation on Tuesday, and then we'll talk about our own work plan following that up shortly. The next thing on the agenda is to work through the two documents I circulated yesterday, the new text about affirmation of commitments inclusion in the bylaws and the other bylaw changes indicated by the stress tests regarding GAC, which we've discussed a number of times, and the ability to take action where the ICANN board doesn't move to implement an AOC review, I think is the other one. But all the people here to present the issues, you are on the call. And we will hold over the last 5 minutes of the call, so in about 55 minutes, to whatever we're up to, we will stop and we'll just talk to the work plan briefly. And to get you thinking about that, I have to indicate that we've had a meeting with the co-chairs just now, co-chairs which are ICANN staff. And what we're still heading towards needing to finalize our output by Friday. So that's leaving me thinking we need to have another call on Wednesday in our usual slot. And I'm hoping that that might be the last one we need to have. But if it isn't, we'll have to have another on Thursday. So we'll explain that last 5 or 10 minutes of the call. So hopefully that doesn't leave you with any questions. And the first thing on the agenda is the legal advice that Sidley and Adler have provided for us. And I believe that Councillor on the call, Rosemary, is here from Adler. And I think from Sidley we have Michael Clark. So we're not going to do a presentation of this. The material has been circulated to couple of days ago. You've got a scrolling copy of the first memo on the screen in front of you. As you'll have noticed, hopefully the legal advice, aside from the covering commentary, is at the end of each template in blue. I thought this was a very helpful document, and I'd just like to thank you guys from the legal service providers for helping us in providing this. Then I will ask for a speaking list. Are there questions, primarily questions, if not questions, comments, counsel on this? This is basically first look and a chance for these people to get first responses on this material before they present to the whole CCWG tomorrow and to identify things that we might want to further follow up on Wednesday. So, does anyone speak? It is a chance for you to put your hand up and to do so. Caboose, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yes. Good evening, good morning, good day to everybody.
May I suggest that the policy document of 10th April is a very complex document. I have also only been able to read the main part of that one or two times. Is it possible that we discuss this document in a separate dedicated session rather than in the session we are talking about other issues that you have referred to? Is it just by way of suggestion? Unless there is some very general comment, because there are many important issues raised in this document which requires time to carefully read. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. The short answer is no, we're not going to dedicate a special call to this document, because what this does is provide brief snippets of advice on the powers that we've proposed, but it does so in a context that makes it clear that without the mechanism that implements them, you can only go so far in the discussion. And so that's the discussion that we're having with a full presentation on tomorrow's CCWG call. And then our follow-up call on this on Wednesday, by then we will be able to identify what other follow-up we need. I know that the CCWG itself will be planning further calls to work through stuff in detail. But for us to schedule a special call now to work through this document in detail, given that where we are, there are five or six critical paragraphs that are new and interesting information, it isn't part of my plan to do that. But that said, let's have this conversation. Let us wait until we've worked through that and our work plan, the AOC stuff, and then we'll have a better sense of whether we need to come back, and if so, what to. Paul Toomey, your hand is up.
Thanks for that. And I just want to address one specific thing, which I've been raising a couple of sort of emails over the last several days. I wonder if there's a way, either perhaps later in this document, but some other document, to just be quite clear that in all of the discussion of membership here, which is actually in some respects sort of elected or appointed representatives of various supporting organizations, et cetera, that there could be something said which makes quite clear this is not full individual and corporate membership. The wording, I understand the wording comes from the Californian law, but outside the United States of California, this is actually quite confusing. And my particular concern is there's a series of governments meeting this week in The Hague in the cyber conference, where I know the discussion that ICANN talking about a membership model is floating around. But the perception of that, and this is in foreign ministries and others, is that it's the full membership organization that people like the Europeans and others are used to. So I think this use of the word members got confusing. I mean, obviously I had got confused about it earlier. So even in the first one or two, three pages of the memorandum, it's not clear to an outsider. It's only clearer once you get way back into pages 40 and 50, et cetera. So I'd wonder if there's some way we can just get some simple clarifying statement or document on the record that might help on that.
Thanks, Paul. That's a good point, because the last thing we want to do is set up a debate that we weren't planning to have through unclear use of terminology or unclear definition of the terms that we are using. I think that in terms of what this working party is doing, the membership model stuff will be present in the, assuming that the lawyers are going to recommend us taking that approach. It will be present in our and I think it'll be right at the front of our section, and almost the second sentence will have to be that this does not involve individuals joining and having decision-making rights in ICANN. So it is going to be right up front. The exact where of that is probably not quite clear. And in terms of documenting between now and Wednesday, what I could do as rapporteur is to send an email to the whole CCW list. Just makes it clear we're not contemplating individual one person, one vote type membership rights. Other than that, I don't think we can do anything that's very much more official. And Robin and others,
I very much want to leave it in your hands, but but I would say to you that there are members of the community who've been engaged in this area who are actually in The Hague this week who are actually arguing for the model of individual membership. So you may want to, if that's not your intent, you may want to perhaps, you know, as you said, follow, tell the full CCWG or whatever, just to be clear.
Okay.
I'm concerned about this week we'll end up with some governments having an unintended expectation.
Okay, thanks. Thomas, you've got your hand up. We can't hear you, Tom. We still can't hear you, Tom. Just hear a random clicking noise. Okay, Paul, I'm assuming that's your old hand, so if you could take that down, that would be helpful. Caboose.
Yes, perhaps I was not clear on my first comment. I suggest you could kindly consider dealing with this document of 10th of April together with the other one, 4th of April, in a separate dedicated meeting. And following the question raised before that, we need to be careful about terminology. In the 10th of April document, they refer to member. In the 4th of April document, they refer to member group. So there is some inconsistencies between terminologies, member, member groups, and so many things. So we have to be very clear. The same, it is strange, the same group of legal advisor or legal firm, they refer to two different terminology, member group and member. Are they different? Are they the same? So I suggest that we set aside a specific time to deal with this legal assessment, and tonight we're going to the normal document that you have already put, and this is heavily posted tonight together with the report of the CWG. So this is by way of suggestion, if other colleagues agree with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Thomas, do we have audio now? Can we hear you? Thomas is handed down and no noise, so I think that means we cannot hear him. Robin, the next person on the speaking list is Steve. So, Steve, please go ahead.
Thank you. It's Steve DelBianco, and I'm going to refer to page 4 of the legal memo under item 6, a really important paragraph on balancing accountability and decision-making authority. There are two observations in there I'm going to push back a little bit on, partly because you acknowledge in your final section that maybe the majority of your concerns is over this notion of a broad community veto over substantially all board decisions. And if we educate you on this call that there isn't such a broad community veto on all corporate decisions, that could lead you to significantly revise point number 6. Because in point number 6, you make a point that what we are designing is unlikely to be an efficient decision-making structure for the oversight of ICANN's business, and yet we don't seek to have oversight over all of ICANN's business. We want review and redress of certain decisions that the board makes to ensure that decisions that it makes are accountable to the community. So we don't seek to get into every element of business, you know, especially regarding something like being able to block or veto a budget. It's a once-a-year exercise. And I hope you'll note that our template calls for a continuing resolution so that the organization can continue to function on the prior budget without any interruption while we're working out situations where their budget does not meet the approval of a significant supermajority of the community. So I do want you to understand, and Robin's on the call, others can help to weigh in, if we can dispel the notion that there's any mechanism on the table or a wide-open community veto over all or substantially all board decisions, then I would hope that you can rephrase point number six. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I think that is an important point. There was some confusion in some parts about this broad community veto, and I would just like to endorse what you say as an accurate reflection of where we are. Many of us are concerned with the fact we have to leave the ICANN board able to govern and manage the organization in an appropriate way that meets its legal responsibilities. So this idea of a community says no to anything it likes notion isn't one that we're trying to pursue, and that may indeed have an impact on the written legal advice. Now, the next person with their hand up is Sam Mansour Eisner, ICANN staff. Sam, go ahead.
I think that mine might actually go to mechanism as well, because I had a particular question about membership. So maybe I should hold that off until tomorrow, or I don't know where to avoid that.
Yeah, I think it is tomorrow. Look, it is a bit – this isn't working out the way that I wanted it to in terms of the order of things. Given that we are the community empowerment group, my hope was that we would have a full discussion on what the lawyers were going to advise in respect of what the mechanism should be, and that we would have the chance to tease out the pros and cons of that, get our heads around the thinking, and be in a position as Working Party One to make a recommendation from us to the whole CCWG. Now, that isn't happening. It isn't happening because of the timeframes that we're operating under. The lawyers made the clear and cogent case that they couldn't get ready to present that for this call. They need the extra 24 or whatever it is hours to be ready to present. It's another 18 hours, I think, beyond now. So that's why we're not discussing the mechanism here. Given the very tight interlinkages between the mechanism and the powers, I acknowledge this is frustrating. I am as frustrated as anyone else might be in this situation. But that's the deck we've got, and so that's what we need to stick with. So please, lots of the chat is on these mechanisms. There is no profit in us discussing it on this call. It is going to be on the table in its entirety tomorrow. I would just ask that we keep focused on a couple of on any kind of questions on the powers and stuff. And I would like to take one myself, if I may, which is the content here about the budget veto. And I haven't been able to print off a copy of that. That seems to be a printer problem. But the budget veto, I think, is fairly early up in this paper. As we speak, I'm just trying to find the template that. Yeah, it's blocking the strategic planner budget. And actually, this is expanded on a bit more in the covering memo from the other team. We aren't looking to micromanage, and I think that just chimes into what Steve said. So it would be a pull-down vote on the budget, forcing it back to ICANN. We don't need, I think, advice from legal about any difficulties that might create for ICANN, because we've incorporated in what we're getting to in the comment doc the notion that we need to build that into the planning processes. But I do think it's helpful to draw attention to. Are there other people who've got a particular question or point to make on this long memo, where, though it is long, of course, most of the material is material that you've all seen before. The legal content is in the blue boxes. Steve, your hand is up.
Well, when we take a moment, I want to come back in on top of the point you and I are making about avoiding legal advice with respect to powers that we haven't even asked for, since that leads the memo to become misused by those who are opponents of giving the community the kind of accountability we seek. They'll be able to point to our own legal counsel, whose memo indicated that this decision-making is inefficient, or that we have in some way gotten in the way of ICANN's business. So to the attorneys, we're asking you to recognize that in some cases, particularly page 4, item 6, you've written about something we haven't proposed. So please don't let your concerns about that item, and Jordan just brought up another one, don't let your concerns about that item remain in the text, because it will, unfortunately, be used against us in the pursuit of what we're doing.
Thanks, Steve. I'm getting increasingly disturbed by the fact the chat is still on a trajectory about the mechanism. But anyhow, there are no more hands up on this one. I would like to move us to the other memo briefly and just to ask whether there were any comments or questions about that. I wonder if the staff could load it into the Adobe window. I hope that request is clear, by the way. We're talking about the PDF that I recirculated today that was a Word document circulated by the lawyers a day or so ago in response to our comment period. For that memo, I just would reiterate the point about the budget control power. And just want to respond in the chat. Robin, I asked specifically for discussion of the mechanism being used not to be tabled until tomorrow. If you've got comments and questions about the document in front of us that are questions for the lawyers that will help equip them for the full discussion in the CCWG tomorrow, that would be helpful to raise. And given that we are plumb out of time in the context of this call, doing that in writing is probably the easiest way for the lawyers to address it, because we're going to need to flick on to our next agenda item. So if I can be really clear, most of the material in the memo on what the powers are, I hope that you've all read. This was the chance to ask some brief questions about it. So the mechanism that the community might use to enforce these powers, that is what the lawyers are going to be presenting on, with a recommendation of what their preferred or recommended model is on the CCWG call tomorrow. I don't know how to be clearer on this question than that. And Robin has asked a question specifically on page 35 of the previous document. We'll just have a, now that we've got the new document, again, I would ask for speakers who might have any questions, comments. Is the counselor on this call listening to the discussion? Are there any points to raise on this document? Steve, your hand is up.
It is, and it'll be quick. On page 3 of this document, in the blue text, Sidley and Adler have done exactly what they did in the other memo, which is to give us, well, appreciated but unsolicited advice about how we might get in the way of ICANN's budgeting process, where you said, quote, we have concerns about implementation in terms of defining the level of detail that has to be included in budget strat plans and op plans for community approval. But with all due respect, we have done so for 10 years. We look at incredibly detailed 100-page documents with budgets. I'm not saying we do the best job of it, but the detail is there, and we have an opportunity to comment on that. I don't think that it makes any sense for you to be commenting on a process without actually understanding it. And that advice presupposes that we would be line item vetoing or line item adjusting the budget, and that isn't the case, as Jordan articulated a few minutes ago. And where you say, your conclusion is so powerful on page 3. Given these concerns, you say, we question the necessity of this power in light of the more powerful accountability mechanisms available, which is powers over the board composition. What, once every 3 years, except for the NOMCOM, we get to elect them? The power to remove a director, which we don't have right now. The power to recall the whole board, which we don't have, and it's going to be a high threshold. So I honestly think that you're being conclusory in the blue text on page 3 in a way that prejudices against one of the easier community powers we are seeking, the ability to veto a blanket budget. So appreciate your insights, but I don't think they're applicable, and we are not in this case seeking line item changes to the budget. So I would ask that be revised as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I would echo your point again, as we did in the last one, and Robin was endorsing it as well. For anyone who's looking at the screen here in the Adobe room, the thing that we're discussing at the moment is on page 3 out of 20, under heading 6.5.2, power to reject budget or strategy / operating plan. I'd like to confer for council that we haven't, in these templates, discussed a line item veto. That's coming to the community veto misunderstanding we discussed with the previous memo. And that's just not on the agenda. So I do think that this needs to be, the wording here doesn't quite reflect, I think, what we're doing. And just to be clear with Caboose, we were discussing the long memo. We've moved on to the short memo, the cover memo that the lawyers provided in response to our initial comment input. That's the document that's in front of you in the screen today. It's one of the two documents I emailed around earlier, and in fact I sent a PDF of it around a couple of hours ago. Is there anything that we've had in this conversation that the legal counsel would like to respond to or have ask any further clarifying questions?
Well, I'm sorry. This is Michael Clark. I don't have my hand up because I'm trying to find myself on the list on a rather balky internet connection. But I would just say the comments about the budgetary review and that sort of stuff really is very helpful in giving us an understanding of the perception that those are really fairly limited powers in terms of what you have in mind, and so I think that's it's been a helpful discussion to hear that, and we also very much take to heart the need for clarification as to what a member really is. That comes rather naturally to all of the folks that are working on the document, because we are all nonprofit lawyers, but I think we may not have appreciated that may not be necessarily a concept that is not so familiar to some of the readers. So we will try and take that into account. But the comments have been very helpful.
Thanks, Michael. Rosemary, did you want to say anything?
I agree with Michael. It's been helpful to listen to the discussion. I think it's possible that we have addressed concerns that, while they may not have been raised by all of the versions of things we were seeing, we've seen versions that did talk about a line item veto, and I think that it concerns us a lot. And if we were wrong to be concerned by that, I think partly that's because there's just so much content about what people want, and various different people want different things, and this stuff creeps in, and we don't know who anyone is, I'll be frank. So I can't tell whether the person who's bringing up the line item veto is someone who has got the pulse or is out in the fringes in thinking that there should be a line item veto. So we can certainly take this input. This input is really helpful, as Mike said, to help us not to go down rabbit holes.
Great. Okay, thanks. And I do, when we're in the middle of this, it's kind of hard to remember that most people aren't. So that's a useful reminder, Rosemary. Thank you. In terms, there is some demand, I think, to ask more detailed questions about these documents. We certainly don't have time to do it today. I would like to myself reflect on that and then email the working party list with a proposal and a couple of options. I think probably what that will involve is a kind of out-of-sync call for those who are most interested in tackling questions with the council about these memos, and to then give people a chance to ask the questions that they have. In terms of council getting guidance, I think that you should always feel free to seek my input or the input of any of template drafters to get some clarification about those kind of political points, Rosemary, or to get an explanation of where the proposals will come from, where they're going. We have that info. We're happy to transmit it to you in any way that seems appropriate. So bearing in mind that we will have some more time available for people to ask questions, I would also strongly encourage you to, with questions on these memos, to write them down. Write them down, send them on email on the working party list, because that is by far the most efficient way to make sure that your questions are well formed and shared with everyone, firstly. And secondly, it's much easier for the lawyers to understand and to be able to get the right people in their teams to work on them than in a call format with one or two people present. So we're heading towards moving on to the next agenda item, but Caboose, I see that your hand is up. Please go ahead.
George, I'm very sorry if I was not able to attract your attention. It is difficult to follow these discussions. It is midnight in Geneva, and we have to use our time efficiently and effectively. We cannot discuss several documents at the same time. We should have one document, and we should ask the people to prepare themselves for that document. The document of 11 April is not a very useful document, because it says, see our comment on this page, see our note on that page. There should be a clear comment below each paragraph. So your initial document should be there. And if the Sydney and others want to have a comment below that, they should reproduce their comment. But it is not easy to follow that saying that see our comment under this, see our comment under that. It is not possible. Either we are writing something for ourselves or we are writing something for the other people to understand. I'm very sorry. It is very difficult to follow this discussion. Please identify one single document for the next meeting, and we have to prepare ourselves and no other documents, and not jumping from page 1 to page 6 and so on and so forth. We should start the document page by page, and we see whether there is any comment. It is very difficult. Some people are very well prepared, some people are less prepared, but all of us are interested. If you kindly allow us to comment, and that is our comment, it is difficult to follow the discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. I essentially I agree with you. What I would like to have done is to have had lawyers in place a couple of months ago, and I would like us to have had an advisory document from them on our powers with coherent comments all in one place about those and a recommended resolution about how we instantiate those, how we create a mechanism to deliver them. It simply isn't where we are, and we can't get there. We can't go back in time. We can't ask people to do the impossible. Now, where I think this does apply very strongly is in what we do next in this working party. And I'll try and propose something in the last 5 minutes, which I think will help us get to what you want, which is one piece of work to look at where all the key points we need to take into account are in one place. So ending with that point, thank you very much to the council for being on the call. I feel as dissatisfied with some of where we're at as many others of you do. If you've got questions on these either of these papers, if you're able to raise them in writing, that would be great. The sooner the better is great. It helps inform council. It helps inform me. It helps inform the legal sub-team. It doesn't mean you're going to get an individualized response to each of your questions immediately, and we'll do some further work about how we can have further discussion on these memos. So thank you, everyone. We will now move to the next agenda item, which relates to the AOC incorporation document that Avery and Steve and co worked on. And this is to stand in the comments document. Last call, we discussed having a table in this which would explain where all the commitments and the affirmation of commitments would go. Now, this content was in the document we discussed on our call on the 10th of April, but we ran out of time to present it or to talk about it. Most of the material in this document is already familiar to you, but the table itself is a little bit new. So I would like to ask whoever it is best placed to present this one, and I think it's you, Steve. Just before I say that, to the council on the call, thank you for attending. You're welcome to stick around for this, but we won't be asking you any more questions. Steve, please go ahead. I don't know about anyone else, but I can't hear Steve at this point.
I can't either.
Can you hear me now? Thank you. How about that?
Yep, can hear you now.
Sorry about that. I am only going to cover a little bit of context. I think I want to leave it to Aubrey and Matthew to really address the substance, which is in the second column of the table under 661. So really quickly, on the last call for Work Party 1, we addressed the fact that only some of the affirmation commitments were going to make their way in here because there are other of the nine paragraphs that are just preambles or they're commitments that are made by the U.S. government, and there seemed to be broad agreement that we shouldn't even suggest that those kind of commitments be brought into the bylaws where it would bind one government in that way. So underneath, in the top of page one, you'll see there were two parts of this, preserving ICANN commitments, the 3, 4, 7, and 8, and then bringing the four AOC reviews. We added the next sentence that say, other parts of the AOC are either preamble text or commitments by the U.S. government, so these have not been proposed as additions. That's why they're not here, and only the parts of the bylaws which commit ICANN to the community are what we seek to bring into the bylaws. And along the way, to implement many improvements that have been suggested by the community over the past summer and by subsequent ATRT, as Accountability Transparency Review Teams, commitments that have never, recommendations that have never been implemented. So that's the setup for this. And Aubrey, you did the lion's share of the work on column two on the table under 661. And when we go through that, we don't necessarily have the availability of Work Party 2's draft document showing all the core values. Just an hour ago, Becky Burr, the rapporteur for Work Party 2, circulated the latest draft of that. And Aubrey, you'll have to educate us on which draft you worked from. But I'll throw the ball over to Aubrey if I could.
Thanks, Steve. Aubrey, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Aubrey, although I want to defer to Matt, who just, he and I have been sort of arguing in the background about who was going to do it. And he said he would do the 3 through 8, but I'm fine to talk about any of them, but I'll defer to Matt.
Jordan, can you hear me?
We do. We hear you.
Yep.
Great. All right, so just to follow up on what Steve said, so these, what we've done here is we've extracted from Articles 3, 4, 7, and 8 those elements that apply specifically to ICANN. On most of them do apply specifically to ICANN. There was just one, I forget which article it was, where half of it related to the Department of Commerce and the other half to ICANN. And when you listed that second half. So the affirmation of commitment to Article 3 talks about a number of things, including ensuring that decisions made related to global technical coordination of the DNS are made in the public interest, preserve security, stability, and resiliency, promote competition, and facilitate international participation in DNS technical coordination. So the one thing that we kind of extracted from there. So the one issue in the AOC was how do you, some of the notions that are in there are accounted for in various places in the bylaws. So we really focused in on one particular aspect here, which was to add a new core value, which obviously becomes, as is noted in the second column, the area of Working Party 2, which would say that ICANN should ensure that decisions made related to the global technical coordination of the DNS are made in the global public interest and are accountable, transparent, and bottom-up in their formulation. And you'll notice that the and bottom-up in their formulation is underlined because that's new text that was added when these proposals were circulated across around the lists. And the proposed core value 5, which is the again, with additional text that's underlined, says, where it's feasible and appropriate, depending on market mechanisms, to promote and sustain a competitive environment that enhances consumer trust and choice. And you'll note that Article 3 and C talks about promote competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice in the DNS marketplace. So these are two proposals that are for consideration and really do actually or should find their way into the work of WP2, and unfortunately I have not looked to check against Becky's latest draft to see if they are in fact have been taken over, but I believe that she is aware of some of these, or at least Affirmation of Commitment 3 and 8. She has included reference to those in the work that she's been doing. If you go on to Article 4, this one and the next one, number 7, are important core values because they are related to transparency. And they deal specifically with, in the first case, forming and publishing analyses of the effects of decisions on the public and their positive and negative impact on the security, stability, and resiliency of the DNS. And so the idea was, as you'll see in the column 2 there, is to propose a new Section 9 in the bylaws, Article 3 on transparency, that would take that text over a new addition to the bylaws, with a slight editorial addition in there, again, which is underlined, that says, or non-commercial impact. So it's really including a financial or non-commercial impact. Number 7 in the affirmation of commitments is really about, again, it's about transparency, and it's really about the mechanisms and the processes that were followed to get to the point in decision-making and then to actually provide what they call a thorough and reasoned explanation of decisions taken and the rationale thereof. and this was proposed. This is proposed to add in the core values in, again, Article 3 on transparency, a new Section 8. So it would actually precede the earlier edition. And this one, again, would pretty much take over in its entirety, including some small element of underlined new text that you can see in the first couple of lines there. Those two affirmation of commitment, Articles 4 and 7, are pretty important elements of transparency and accountability, and we feel warrants being taken over pretty much in their entirety into the bylaws. Affirmation of commitments, Article 8, is the one that deals with three issues. So I can commit to maintain the capacity and ability to coordinate the DNS and to work for a single interoperable internet. B, to remain non-profit headquartered in the United States. And C, to operate as a multi-stakeholder, private sector-led organization, etc. A couple of things come out of this with a focus on B and C. And obviously we have heard and we've had numerous discussions on the lists, and we've heard from ICANN's CEO in the recent Senate hearing about ICANN's commitment to remain in the United States of America. And this has also been referenced in Becky's work, this Article 8 affirmation of commitment. So this particular issue of jurisdiction obviously needs to be incorporated, and it seems that the best place for that to be incorporated would also be in Becky's working party two. The third point, which is C, we're proposing that be inserted as a new core value in the bylaws or in some form, because it's really a very explicit call for ICANN to operate as a multi-stakeholder, bottom-up, private sector-led organization with input from the public, for whose benefit ICANN shall in all events act. So it's very specific wording that very clearly calls out ICANN's role and its need to operate in a multi-stakeholder fashion. And you'll see there again that there's a slight editorial addition, which are the words bottom-up, so operating as a multi-stakeholder, bottom-up, private sector-led organization. So those are the three affirmation of commitments that we feel should be taken over in part or in whole with some very slight additions into the bylaws. And that needs to be further communicated over to Working Party 2. There are some slight changes in this text compared to the lengthy document that we were just going through, the 92-page document. There are some slight changes, so this is a little bit more up-to-date than that last document. I think I'll stop there if there are any questions.
Great. Thanks, Matthew. We'll just take the speaking list with the hands up. I just want to signal now that these three items, this item and then the two other stress test responses, are on the agenda for the full CCWG tomorrow. I've just had a look at the agenda that came in while our call had started, or just before it. So because there's discussion on this one, we might not deal with the other two on our call, except to raise any questions, given that we're running out of time. But Steve, your hand is up, and then Caboose and then Avery. Steve, go ahead.
Yes, can I raise a question with respect to this table that you have in the document, or you're not discussing this document? I am referring to the item 3, promoting competition, consumers' trust, and consumers' choice. And in AOC, there are two areas. One is relating to GTLD, the other relating to the who is. In both cases, chair of the GAC and CEO are responsible for compositions of the review committee. In the new text, there is no mention of the GAC. What happened to that? Does it mean that the GAC has no more role in the composition of these two important elements, which is GTLD and the who is, which are the fundamental activities of the GAC? Is there any explanation why this has not been reproduced here? Because 9.3 and 9.31 specifically refer to this role of the GAC and CEO in the composition of the review committee. May I ask what happened to those things? Thank you.
I can answer that, Jordan.
Please do.
Yeah, this is with respect to the affirmation reviews. And Cavus, this is Steve DelBianco. We circulated the first draft of these affirmation reviews into the bylaws several weeks ago, and from the outset, we assumed that every single review team would rely upon the ACs and SOs to designate who they wanted to be on the review team. Therefore, nobody was going to tell the GAC who was on, and the GAC and the ICANN board chair would not decide who from the GNSO gets on to the review teams. The idea was to be completely in concert with the rest of these ACSO stakeholder empowerment, is to allow us, each of us, the GAC in your case, the GNSO in my case, to designate who represents us on the review teams. So that's a change that's been anticipated. I'll take responsibility for putting it in writing, but it was surfaced several times over the summer, and it's been in the discussion for several weeks. That's my answer to Cavus. So I wanted to pick up on what Matthew said, that we had a little dilemma here. We didn't know whether this table was supposed to evaluate. I'm talking about the table that Matthew walked us through. We didn't quite know whether we were evaluating what it was that was in the core values draft, or were we being normative and describing what should be in the core values draft that Work Party 2 was working on. I believe we've done the latter in such a way that if we convey it to Becky Burr and Work Party 2, there's a good chance that they can take that into effect on their next draft. I, for one, have not evaluated tonight's draft from Work Party 2 against this. But I will tell you this. In the draft that Becky circulated an hour ago, item 8B from the affirmation of commitments is conspicuously absent. And when I say conspicuously absent, it will be conspicuous to one party in particular, the U.S. Congress, who on February 25th was told by ICANN that the jurisdiction of ICANN shall remain in the USA and we will stand by this. That created an expectation where if we just punt on this, if we leave it out completely, I believe we jeopardize congressional approval of the transition plan. And that comes at a huge risk for almost no reward at all. If we include a statement like the affirmation here, we satisfy stress test 14, which says that the affirmation could go away and it wouldn't matter because it's all baked into the bylaws. Secondarily, ICANN can establish physical presence everywhere, legal presence everywhere around the world. All this says is that they can't leave the legal presence that's in the United States as a process of expanding the global footprint. So I really believe this has way more gain than pain, and that 8B does belong in Workstream 1 bylaws change.
Thank you very much, Steve. I am not convinced. There was good reasons why GAC had a role in the designation or in the compositions of the review. And you simply say that, no, it is not GAC, it is everybody. I am not convinced. In any case, this should be discussed by GAC and should have the confirmation by GAC why they could agree that these rights should be taken from them. Who is one of the important elements of the GAC activities, similarly GTLD. And by doing that, we deprive GAC or from that rights. And I am not convinced. I'm not objecting. Thank you very much. But no consensus at this stage on this. It is a very critical point and must be discussed by GAC to see why this role is taken from them and distributed within the community. GAC is a part of that community, and that is a specific role of GAC. And it was in the AOC from the very beginning, and all of a sudden it's taken out. So I'm not convinced. Sorry.
Well, there's a view. Avery, your hand is up.
Yeah, I wanted to address two things. One, I wanted to cover sort of just quickly the rest of the changes that got made to the affirmation of commitments going in. But also just a quick response to Kavush is that it's not that GAC's role of picking the other members was taken away. It was everyone's role except for the SOs and ACs themselves. So the GAC still picks its own members, but it's true the board, the chair of the board, the CEO, and the GAC chair, and it's only the GAC chair's role that was removed, are no longer responsible for picking the other members from the other SOACs. And it was basically sort of making it a peer-driven, a driven by the community, as opposed to a top-down determination of who. So having the and the board chair, GAC chair and board chair decide who from the ALAC would serve or who from the GNSO would serve seemed inappropriate, but of course it needs to be discussed by all of the ACs and SOs, so I very much agree with that. I agree with Steve when he said in that first table we were pretty much normative and we were pretty much building on the content that had been sent to Sibley and the other firm and the answers we had gotten back from them indicating that these were well said and you know, viable or what have you. In terms of the location, we had a little bit of disagreement among ourselves as opposed to it, whether it was necessary or not. But as people have said before, that kind of thing can be in bylaws fairly easily. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure that it's worth a big fight. The other stuff that got done to this, one of the things that was noticed while we were working on it is that there was a lot of repetition in each one of the possible bylaws descriptions of reviews. And that was, you know, that they would be conducted by volunteers, that review teams did the selection of experts, that wasn't done by an outside group, rules on the transparency and openness and availability to documents, and that final output of reviews was published for public comment and then board consideration, et cetera. So that showed up in all of them, and therefore it was just an idea to remove that and put that into sort of a chapeau and overhead of what all of these things that we are calling periodic reviews would have. There was also an element that was put in that was derived from recommendations in both ATRT1 and especially ATRT2 in terms of an annual report on the state of improvement that were recommended and approved from previous review teams. So that clearly reporting by ICANN on what's been done in response to all the recommendations they had. So that was also stuck in the chapeau there. Then in terms of each of the other accountabilities, they were pretty much left as they were, except for the repetitive content being removed with a few changes. There was the change of from 3 years to 5 years in all of them. There was a change on the who is. There had been a recommendation that we should make reference to, and this is on the
I was running over a little bit.
There should be reference.
Okay, I'll do that. Okay, bye.
Okay, Greg, you need to mute. there should be references made to the OECD privacy standards, so that's explicitly in there now, as you know, in this draft. And then the last thing was, and this is connection to the CWG, was a placeholder was put in. In the CWG, one of the things that's being talked about is that the periodic review of the IANA function be done in the same manner as if it were one of the AOC types of reviews. A placeholder, you know, the language on that has not been solidified, and this group hasn't solidified its language on the AOC's incorporation into bylaws. So just a placeholder was held for that periodic review of the IANA function. And it's quite possible that a second placeholder might be needed, but the CBOG hasn't gotten yet in terms of talking about a bylaw, and but it might not be in this section, so it wasn't included, a bylaw that had to do with calling how a RFP could be triggered. And that would need to be a bylaw statement, too, but that wasn't included because that wasn't specifically AOC. So those were the changes. They weren't major changes, but it was changes made for clarity for the most part, and then a couple additions. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Look, guys, we're totally over time, and we have to spend 5 minutes just on next steps. So, Greg, you've pulled your hand down. Caboose, is there anything you really need to say right now?
Yes, Jordan. I am grateful to Avery. I'm grateful to Steve providing this. In any case, I am in my position as a member of the GAC that this needs to be carefully discussed by GAC, this major departure from what was in IOC since very beginning for 15 years. That is number one. Number two, changing 3 years to 5 years also is a drastical change. And the review, 5 years is too long period. And at least we should put some qualifying sentence saying that unless otherwise specified elsewhere in this bylaw or article should be not beyond 5 years. So there might be circumstances that we have a review much shorter than 5 years, and we have to clearly mention that. And secondly, there should be a consistency between many issues dealing with the period. If you have somewhere 3 years, somewhere 5 years, that should be one single period, unless specifically mentioned somewhere. And I don't know about the operation or the strategic plan, whether there is a 5 years plan or 3 years plan, but there was some logic to have 3 years, and again, changing to 5 years. We should have sound and, let's say, strong reasons. I'm not objecting, but just commenting on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. That's good input. I know it all has been noted, and we will discuss this issue further on the call tomorrow, the CCWG call. It might be today. I've lost track of my UTC time. Look, sorry that we've run over, people. At the call tomorrow, the CCWG call, we will be having a discussion of the next the mechanism, and then we're going to have some final work to do on our comment report. I'm sick of underestimating the amount of time that people want to talk about stuff. So my procedural recommendation is that we have two further meetings this week to wrap things up. Now, the co-chairs are going to propose a different working method with a document freeze over this coming weekend and then calls next week to work through and sign off the comment document. So we have to have our stuff finished by Friday UTC. So what I'm proposing is that we pick up our old Wednesday 2100 UTC slot, which as far as I can tell doesn't conflict with any other proposed meetings in the CWG or the CCWG, Wednesday 2100 to 2300. And then the second thing that I'm proposing is that there was a CCWG meeting scheduled for 1900 UTC on the 16th of April. That one is going to be one of the meetings that's deferred, but in theory, we all have it in our diaries. So I would like us to take over that slot, 1900 to 2100 hours on the 16th of April. That means we'd have two further meetings this week, 2100 to 2300 on Wednesday, and 1900 to 2100 on Thursday. After the meeting tomorrow, I will prepare a further draft of our comment report that includes all the feedback from last Friday's conversation and all of the stuff that arises from our meeting on Tuesday with the CCWG when we get the mechanism. We'll have a chance to work through about half of it with plenty of time to do that on Wednesday, and the other half along with any final changes on Thursday. And then we will have about 24 hours after that to just review the doc again by email, any last-minute tweaks, before it gets frozen and put in front of a full CCWG for consideration. So we'll get diary invites sent out as soon as we can for those, but that's most likely the approach. I don't see how we can possibly fit it in 2 hours, so we're going to have two calls, and that's pretty much where we are. Are there any, and last the staff for that, the diary invites ASAP for that. Are there any comments in response to that question? Caboose, is your hand up for that or for the previous?
Yes, I raise my hand to request you that any document that you want to discuss at subsequent meeting, that document must be specifically available at least 8 to 12 hours before the meeting, and that would be the document that we would concentrate. We would not jump from one document to the other documents, one memorandum from other memorandum, because there are many memorandum we have not yet discussed.
Caboose, I completely agree with you. The deadline that I impose on myself for getting things for our calls is 12 hours. Sometimes it slips for 10 hours. It will be a single document, which will be our input to the comment report. It will all be integrated in one thing. It will all be in one place. It will be easier to follow than what we've been doing today.
No problem. 10 hours, no problem. But not 2 hours before the meeting. It's very difficult to look at the document.
I've already said 12 hours, maybe 10, not 2. Okay. Are there any other points on the process? Or can we draw this to a close with, again, apologies that we're running 10 minutes late? I don't see any other hands up. So on that basis, I will say thank you all for your contributions here today. We'll speak with all of you in about 15 hours on the CCWG call. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Bye-bye.